Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the MLB.com Fantasy 411 Showgram Extravaganza on April 30th, 2015, Year of Our Lord, 1AB. Mike Ciano, along with Corey Stach Schwartz, and a very special guest that we'll bring in just a second. But first, a little quick housekeeping. Fantasy411.mlblogs.com is, of course, the blog for two-star pitchers, getting your questions answered by the Goose, all that good stuff. The Twitter machine, at Fantasy411, at Schwartzstops, at TheCap23, at Fred Zinke MLB, who does some answering on Twitter to the fans as well. And what's your Twitter address, Duke?
Jim special
underscore
guest.
Duquette.
Special guest. And then special guest Jim underscore Duquette. And we welcome in Jim, who's doing a little guest appearance, and we'll try to get him on here and there, but I got to wake up a little earlier for it, so we're not going to do this too much. But Duke's going to get ready for a Series XM show, but he was nice enough to join us first for a couple minutes. What's up, man?
Always glad to be back.
Yeah,
with
feels
the
like
boys.
Getting the band
feels
back
like
together.
It's been a while. We never did the TV together, though. The three of us, because
right. You and I were always out on those.
That's right.
Right.
You filled in for one of you guys.
Right. Right. And then Nando would fill in for me, and I think you would fill in for Corey.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
And Joe Sheehan would pop in once in a while.
Yeah, because JB's irreplaceable. What are you going to do?
Of course. You know, you need that baritone to kind of keep the thing together.
Well, hello, Jim. So anyway, I mean, there's tons to talk about, but we only have you for a little bit, so we'll aim high. One thing that we were discussing before we started recording here was Korea.
Yeah.
And how, you know, it's been another April of some studs getting called up, especially on the Chicago side, the north side of Chicago, I should say, with Russell and Bryant. But Villar got called up, not Carlos Correa, but you talked to A.J. Hinch on your show.
Yeah.
What did you find out with that conversation?
Well, you know, the guy's hitting 400. He's doing everything you want in AA, but they're talking about leaving him down there for the time being. They're not quite sure he's ready. Now, it's hard to say that he's not when you look at his numbers, but they want to go right now with a combination of Villar and Marwin Gonzalez defensively. And, you know, the things that you look for, you know, the problem when you take a guy that's in AA and jump him all the way to the big leagues, you know, AA, he's facing AA prospects. They're all the big arms, but they don't have the same command at AAA, and they're not throwing, you know, cutters and backdoor two-seamers and front-door two-seamers and all those things that you see at the major league level. And so I would hope that they would maybe get him a little exposure to AAA first and just see how he does offensively before they bring him up. I wouldn't be surprised if they do some of that. Right now, I don't know if he's really beating all that challenge in AA, honestly.
I mean, you look at the nature of the injury with Jed Lowry. You know, he tore a ligament in that thumb. They say he's going to be out after the All-Star break. I could understand if this was like, you know, a sprained ankle and it was only 2 weeks, and why bring Correa up if it's only going to be 2 weeks? But sort of like with Bryant and with Addison Russell, this is a chance for Correa to not only come up, but have a sustained stretch of playing time to make the adjustment to the major leagues and establish himself. I mean, you know, Lowry's going to be out for a couple of months. So when you talk, there was a quote, I think, that Luno said in spring training, something to the effect of, we won't hesitate to bring him up from AA if the situation warrants.
Right.
So is this kind of a situation where they're looking for reasons to leave him down now? Because maybe their hand got called a little bit. Like, oh, wow, we weren't really expecting this. I mean, you know, you talk about, you know, learning, you know, he's controlling the strike zone in AA. He's hitting for power. He's stealing bases. He sounds like he's pretty good defensively. What are the things they want him to work on?
Right. I think, you know, they got surprised. They weren't expecting Jed Lowry to get injured, right? And I think when you think about bringing up a guy from AA or AAA, usually you're thinking, all right, let's get him through the first 2 months of the season, get his feet wet, get him under, you know, get, let's say, 200 at-bats at the minor league level, get his confidence going, see what, see how things look. See, as you get through that league the second time, how he adjusts to pitchers at that level. You know, all of those things that you go through at the major league level, except, you know, you're doing it at the minor league level. And then, okay, once the middle of the season's here, now we start to target whether he's ready to come up and whether he can help us, whether it's at shortstop or maybe at second. If, you know, Altuve, obviously they're not going to replace. But you start to look for places that he might help you. I don't think he expected April 30th or April 29th that he's going to get the call up. And I think that's the one, you know, the caveat. You know, they had him in spring training. You know, he's okay in spring, wasn't dominant like Bryant was. I think maybe that's the only real difference between, you know, Bryant. Obviously, this is a younger kid, high school kid. Bryant was a college kid. But, I mean, I can't imagine they're going to keep him down there too much longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you get to the point, and I remember this going back as far as Delmon Young when he was a race prospect where, and I think it was Chuck Lamar at the time, right? It was when we call him up, we don't ever want to send them back down.
Yeah.
And
right,
I think that makes a ton of sense. I mean, when you were in that world,
yeah. We did it with David Wright. You know, and we did it with Reyes. Same thing. Reyes was middle of June. Yeah. Right. Those are perfect examples. Right. Reyes, by the way, was raking, you know, in AAA, you know, and our team stunk, you know, and we could have brought him up any time, but we waited until the middle of June to bring him up. And I think David we brought up in like mid or late August, but we wanted to get him exposure to AAA for a little bit too. So, you know, every organization is a little bit different. Luno, I think, is going to be more aggressive than maybe I was back in the day or some of the other guys, you know, back in the day. But I know Correa, I could see him coming up here pretty quickly.
Yeah. I mean, everybody has to be patient, especially the fantasy player, and especially, I mean, you know, you think about it from the GM kind of mindset that a fantasy player has. You're drafting guys on draft day in March that you have no idea when they're going to come up, and you're just sitting there with them on your roster. You know what I mean? And then they get called up, and if we would have went by Chris Bryant's first at bat, we would have cut him. You know?
Right. That's right. You know this whole day, that first game.
But, to be fair, you know, not everybody comes up. I mean, throw out Bryant's first game. He's been unbelievable.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's insane.
You know, hitting for power, drawing a lot of walks. Yep. I mean, having unbelievable at-bats. But on the other side of the spectrum, Addison Russell is a little bit of a cautionary tale. Mm-hmm. You know, a young player who's been younger than his level at every point, who's being asked to play a new position. You look at some of his early at-bats, a lot of swing and miss, a lot of strikeouts. You know, that's the other end of the spectrum that says, hey, maybe it is smart to have a little bit of caution here.
Yeah, he's only 20 years old. And, you know, Javi Baez, you know, is another cautionary tale while you're at it. I mean, he didn't, you know, it's a unique player that what you're going to get out of Bryant. You know, maybe Correa is closer to Bryant. We don't know. But, you know, I think when you jump in, that level, double A is, you know, there's a reason why there's a level in between double A and the big leagues is to just get that opportunity. A lot of those veteran pitchers that you see, those 4A pitchers can carve you up offensively if you go there for a while.
Yeah, that's a good point with hitting. I never really thought of it that way because you know your best talent pound for pound is in double A. So you think, well, if you're kicking ass in double A, you're ready. But you bring up a good point. And, you know, and when you said that earlier, it made me think of Bryant's first day. Yeah. What Shields did to him his first at bat, I was my God, that was ridiculous, you know. And obviously, you know, I didn't think he was going to stink for the rest of his life off of it, but it shows you that that jump and what people can do to you on the major league level. But it's funny to me that, you know, the way things are going, and when we were putting together the email of what to talk about today, I mean, I spit out the first 10 names I spit out were guys because they were hurt.
Right.
You know, can we, I mean, really, are we still surprised by guys getting hurt? I mean, it's just, it doesn't matter anymore. I mean, I don't care what, it's going to be 2050, and we're going to be, you know, we're going to still say, oh, my God, just the most guys ever got hurt in April?
You think about all the advancements that have been made in, you know, in health and preventive medicine and with pitch FX, all these things we can do to analyze pitchers, and the same number of pitchers go on the DL every year now in the last few years than they did 10 or 20 or 30 years ago. Pitchers get hurt. No one's unlocked this mystery yet.
And I'm not even talking about Wainwright either. I'm just talking about regular stuff like the hammies with Wright and Puig and Gomez and all this other stuff, you know, Tanaka, whatever. I mean, I'm not talking about the pitchers hitting stuff.
Right.
I'm just making it clear for Duke.
you don't think he understands?
Ryu's another, you know, I mean, Ryu, you know, we saw obviously Tanaka being injured. I mean, you know, some of these guys had a history of it. Some of them didn't. That's the scary part is the guys who didn't have the history of it. You know, you're like, oh, man, you know, where is this going to stop? I don't think we're going to see, you know, a reduction in it anytime soon from the people I talk to, the doctors I talk to, some of the major league trainers. You know, they realize it's an issue. This has been ongoing for a while, as you mentioned, and it's going to continue. You know, I mean, shoot, you see some teams, Toronto just said recently they're going to throw out the pitch count and the innings pitch limits. So they seem to be going in the other, he said, because nothing we've done to this point has prevented them from getting injured, you know. So I don't know where the answer is, really.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, you know, as a stats and data guy, we like to think because we have all this data, we have all the answers. But in reality, it just teaches you how much you don't know. So we're getting pitch counts now into A-ball. You know, we have pitch FX data on guys, not just in the majors. We have some guys in spring training, some guys in Arizona Fall League. We're starting to get benchmarks. But you don't know how much a kid threw when he was in elementary school or grade school or high school. You don't know what his genetic makeup is or what his, you know, his muscle mass and, you know, the strength of his joints. Like, we don't know what's allowing all these injuries to happen because there's all of this incomplete data out there that we wish we could get, and we're finding ways to scrape it together. And, you know, hopefully with, you know, the commissioner with the One Baseball Initiative, you'll start to see some, you know, synchronicity between youth baseball and college and high school and everything, where we'll start to get more complete data. And by the time guys to come to the major leagues, we'll have a better expectation for what it takes to keep them healthy.
Sure.
But right now, we're in the woods. We're still in the woods.
Yeah.
Well, the ASMI people, and Dr. Andrews in particular, you know, he likes to point to the roots of it starts at the youth level, you know.
Yeah.
And if you can protect some of these guys from pitching too much, you know, and educate the parents and the coaches at that level, then maybe we have a chance down the road. But that's like, you know, it's like starting
a generation away.
Yeah, 10 years, you know, and let's start now, and let's see what ends up happening. I'll say this. The one thing that you see with you know, differences between, let's say, 70s and 80s pitching versus now is, you know, these starting pitchers are throwing all out, max effort, every pitch, 90 pitches, 95 pitches. Mm-hmm. You know, in the 70s and 80s, they were conditioning themselves to go 9 innings.
Right.
And so they backed off a little. They were going 80%, 85%. You know, they learned how to add and subtract, where these guys are just balls out, letting it fly, right? Fastball, hard, nasty slider, because why? Here comes 95 behind them, you know, 96
yeah, right.
behind them. So I think that's the other aspect of it is, you know, there's a lot of different areas. You mentioned, you know, the way guys built, some of the medical sides of things. But I think the other aspect of it is, you know, the workload and the heavy workload.
I know you got to get going soon, but
that was
good stuff. But real quick before we do let you go, what players? I know you were high on James Paxton coming in. You mentioned Walker, his fellow Mariners pitching mate there. What guys have surprised you early on and disappointed you early on?
Well, I think Paxton's one guy that's kind of disappointed me so far, just because I expected a lot more, obviously, out of him. I think you were listening when we were in Seattle camp.
Yep.
I mean, this guy still has good stuff. I believe in him, too. But, again, that's the tricky part about some of these young pitchers. Even Taiwan Walker, if you had him the first three starts, you might have jettisoned him or cut him, traded him, whatever.
I tried to trade for him.
Yeah, well, that's
like,
the time to do it.
Yeah, I mean,
right.
buy low, and just nobody was biting because, it's the obsession with prospects, though, right? People won't cut loose on a prospect because they're like, well, I drafted him because I think he's going to be something eventually.
Right.
And so that's why it's hard to buy low.
What's amazing also is that sort of keeper league mentality has even bled into non-keeper leagues, where people just don't want to give up that next big thing because there's no telling how good they might be.
Right. Well, and Walker is going to be good, you know, and he's already started to figure it out. His last start, I think, is the hopefully going to be the springboard for him. But a guy like Kevin Gausman, who I've been sitting here with on my pitching roster, and he's pitching in relief, and I'm like, I'm calling my cousin, can you get him in the starting rotation? You're killing my fantasy league. Eventually going to end up starting and being a good one. But, you know, that's the difficulty when you're sitting there trying to have the patience. What I try to look for is guys who have upside, the good fastball velocity, and you see that command getting better and better. And once you see the command come, then you're going to see the results. So those are guys, hang with them if you have them on your roster.
Yeah, I mean, I look, you know, box score, I look at how many strikeouts, and then I immediately look at how many walks. Because you have to, because what you're saying, because if there's a 0, 1, or 2 next to a 7, 8, or 9, you're like, all right, you know, this means something. You know, this could be
good
something
point.
Good because, you know, that's what you need. And then, but if it's a 5 under the walks and a 6 under the strikeouts, then I'm like, all right, let me look at the earned runs. It's probably going to be ugly.
Well, what's worse is, you know, you look at, for example, like, this is not a fair comparison because it's an older pitcher, but, you know, Jared Weaver threw 7 innings on Tuesday night and had 1 strikeout.
Yeah, right.
He didn't walk anybody. That's great. So he was good for your ratio.
Right.
He had 1 strikeout.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
that killed you.
It's hard to succeed in baseball today if you can't strike guys out.
Right, right.
You know?
And you're chasing that stat now constantly because there are so many strikeouts in the game, mainly because of what you said about bullpens and guys throwing so hard when they come out to start the game. Yeah, I think like the Yankees struck out like 13 or 16 times in a 9-inning game that they won the other day, you know? So, you know, it's like the guys that don't strike anybody out right now have become basically useless. Because there's so many strikeouts to be had out there, a guy that's going to drag you down, almost like Adam Dunn would drag down your average, I don't want this guy, and I don't care if he's more, and I love Mark Burley, but in fantasy, he's almost useless.
Right. Well, here's a question I'll throw out to you while I'm here. You know, you're trying to grab a win, right? So a guy like Burley might help you win.
We don't chase wins here at the full and one.
We don't fear them either.
don't fear them. And if, you know, if you're in a league that counts wins, you know, and you're, right now I'm sitting here in a 16-teamer, and I'm third in wins. fourth and wins. So I feel like I'm chasing him, right. But then I'm like, well, it's killing me because if I do, there goes my ERA, and here goes my whip. Yeah. So it's kind of a fine line. But I mean, I always go back to when we were first doing this and trying to find the matchups, daily matchup, and try to go that route and see what the best matchup is for that particular day. There's not an awful lot of room there. But a guy like Burley, maybe in a spot start here or there, will help you. But
of course,
R.A. Dickey. Now that his knuckleball velocity's gone backwards, isn't going to necessarily help you as much, but on occasion he might help you.
Give us one player that you're excited about that we should be looking out for, whether it's coming back from injury, getting called up like a Correa, or just struggling right now.
Well, I mean, I love Correa. I love Lindor with Cleveland. Mm. I think they're going to have a hard time keeping him in the minors. The way they're playing right now, the way Jose Ramirez is not really playing, I think he's a guy that, I really like what I saw at him. Love the makeup, too. He's really got everything together, it seems like. So he's another guy. I mean, I obviously love the way Jack Peterson's gotten off to the start.
Yeah, he's a good player.
You guys have.
I'm so glad they finally got him into the leadoff spot. I mean, you can say, well, batting eighth, intentional walks, and they pitch around him because the pitcher's behind him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like fifth in baseball in walks. Like, at a certain point, you just have to take that number seriously.
Yep.
And he's hitting for power and playing a great defensive center field.
I always stress that, last thing I promise, but I love when one of my players who I was, you don't know how he's going to hit because he's young or whatever, plays great defense, because then that's going to keep him in the lineup.
Right, yeah.
And they'll be able to work through stuff where maybe they wouldn't if they were a defensive liability. So I love seeing Peterson making these highlight catches every night.
But he played a fly out into what I think a double last night on a ball he lost in lights.
Nobody's perfect.
Really?
Nobody.
Really?
You're nobody.
Tough. Really?
You are
nobody.
Tough.
Okay. Chris Bryant's perfect.
He is perfect. Perfectly handsome as well.
He is a good looking
guy. He's a good looking guy.
I would have to
he's
say.
He's a good looking guy.
6 foot five and a half. How many times is
Theo
Epstein
going to
say he's 6 foot five and a half?
Listen, we're not selling blue jeans here, you guys.
It's either 6'5 or 6'6. We don't need the half, okay?
But I'm like 5'9 and a half.
I just say I'm 5'10, even on my driver's license.
Just round it
that's
up.
That's a lie.
Right,
I lie on my driver's license.
Well, because you got the platform heels, though. Like Saturday Night Fever.
All right, Duke. Thanks as always. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Yes, I'll get up early for you again in a couple weeks.
Let's do it in a couple weeks.
All right. Do your other radio show now, but just tell them how much better this one was, okay?
So speaking, talking to the guys in the studio, the guys behind the glass, as you would call them.
And the girls.
The people behind the glass, that I think one of these days to celebrate like the 1,000th 411 or the 1,500th 411 or one of our upcoming milestone shows, we should just do a marathon 411.
24 hours?
Why not?
For charity.
Get all the guests in, have a different guest in every hour for 15 minutes or something, and just go until we can't go anymore.
Lenny did that one day.
Lenny Melnick?
Yeah.
Really?
He did a marathon for charity on the Fantasy Channel Sirius XM.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know how it went, but...
We should do that. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Just sit around and talk baseball all day?
Yeah.
And take, all the tweets, all the calls, all the everything.
President will call in. Yeah. I mean, it'll be amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Tag out. Hey, Goose, you get the next 8 hours.
No, you got to do it nonstop. They'll bring food in for us.
Yep. Do we get a porta potty in here?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, what about that? What about
bottles.
That part?
See, again, why you got to bring that up?
And it wasn't even, it was unintentional toilet humor, but toilet humor nonetheless.
All right.
So we did a bunch of stuff there with Duke. We're going to get to some Twitter questions. We still got about another 30, 35 minutes or so left here in the show, Graham. So let's go over some other comings and goings. We mentioned Tanaka. I know, you were brave enough to roll the dice.
Sure.
I don't think you expected it to be this reason, but
well it's funny.
It's
so
a reason.
I got him for $10 in Tout Wars. I took a lot of grief over that pick, but my attitude was if I get a half a season out of him, I'm going to get paid on that. And
you got half of a half.
Well, right. Well, it's funny. Through the first two starts, I was like, all right, maybe this wasn't such a good idea. And then his next two starts, he looked fantastic. Right. And then the overall body of work for four starts was pretty good.
Yeah.
I was feeling good about that. So Joe Sheehan in particular, our good friend of the 411, was giving me a lot of grief over Tanaka. And finally I said, all right, I'll make you a bet that Tanaka will throw, I don't know if it was a certain number of innings or a certain number of starts. It was just like a gentleman's bet for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And a week later when he started throwing well, I started texting him like, what was that bet?
Mistakes.
We couldn't even remember what the bet was. But I texted him. So the day after Wainwright got hurt, and I think McCarthy got hurt the next day, I texted Joe and I said, what do you think the odds were? What odds would you have given me on draft day if I told you that Tanaka would throw more innings this year than Wainwright and McCarthy combined?
Yeah.
And then the next day, Tanaka goes on the DL. So the good news is it's not his elbow. The bad news is it's, and Will Carroll could probably tell us a lot better about this. Anytime they talk about something in the forearm, yeah. that tends to be a precursor of an elbow yep. problem. So with Tanaka, they say it's closer to his wrist, but you know, maybe he'll be out for a month, maybe longer. Ultimately, though, it's you kind of, you know, you feel those footsteps, you hear that clock ticking on him.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, it's terrible. And like you said, he was pitching great and you know, rewarding people that took the risk. And you know, he was high risk, high reward.
I yeah, mean, sure.
He was basically the best definition of it in baseball, in fantasy baseball this year was Tanaka with high risk and high reward. So we mentioned Reyes. Duke was talking about him as a young Met prospect who was ready to light the city on fire. And
in a good way.
In a good way.
Wow.
Yeah, oops, sorry about that one. That was inappropriate. Again, unintentional, though. But he's out, so did they call up my boy Kawasaki?
Jose Diaz.
Oh, okay. I thought they were going to call up Kawasaki.
Yeah, Reyes out with
Ryan Goins played yesterday.
Yeah, it turned out that pain in his side was not a pain in the neck like you, Mike. It was a small rib fracture.
Yeah, which is
so he's going to be out for a while. And, you know, I feel bad about this one. I don't have Reyes on any teams. But in Tout Wars, I was sitting next to Ray Flowers. And Ray and I are generally on the same page with a lot of players, so we end up in bidding wars on a lot of players. Reyes came out at a point in the draft where I really just couldn't make a run at him. And it was, you know, $8, $9. And I was whispering to Ray, I'm like, you can't let him go for this. You can't. I was egging him on, but because I thought it was a great value and yeah. looking at Ray's roster and the money, I was like, $12, you got to keep going. So Ray finally took him for, I don't know, $16, $17 or something. And I said, like, awesome buy. I mean, I love that. Mm-hmm. You know, Reyes easily earned that last year, and now he gets hurt again. So I feel bad for Ray. Mm. I stand by the thought that he was worth
sure.
the money, but
don't confuse the outcome with the decision.
Yeah, so
a wise man used to say.
Ray, I'm sorry.
It's all right. It wasn't intentional.
No.
Carl Crawford out for a while. You know, what's interesting now, what's becoming interesting about the Dodgers situation is, you know, they got rid of Kemp, but they had Peterson, so that was kind of a wash with there. But you're like this ether. It's like having six starters in spring training.
Yeah.
These things have a way of working themselves out, and now all of a sudden, ether. Who, by the way, in an NL-only league auction, I got for $1.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's
and now, this guy could do something.
All right, well, let's look at the big picture, though.
Yeah.
As you said, Kemp is out. Peterson's in. Peterson's yeah. the center fielder.
Yep.
Yasiel Puig is going to be their right fielder.
Sure.
That's a done deal. And Carl Crawford, for the last 2 months of the season, hit like he did at any point at the peak of his career.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Ethier had something like 52 at-bats in the entire second half of the season.
Right.
So the playing time picture was very clear-cut.
Sure, absolutely.
Going into the start of the season. Then you've got Scott Van Slyke. They've got to find at-bats for Alex Guerrero. There's no room at the end for Andre Ethier, right? Puig with the pulled hamstring. He should be out the minimum amount mm-hmm. of time. They, you know, if he hadn't re-aggravated the injury when he did, they probably would have just waited another few days.
Yeah, it was like another 4 or 5
right.
days.
Right, so it was almost like the two-week DL stint was just to force some caution.
Basically
on him.
Protect him from himself, right?
Exactly. He'll be out the minimum amount of time. Carl Crawford's going to be out a while with that oblique.
Long
they
time.
Say that
yeah.
is a bad oblique injury. Yeah. So now Ethier's got a chance to reestablish himself. You know, he's probably a number three, number four outfielder, 280 with power. But he's
fine.
Dodgers lead the NL in home runs, dude.
Yeah.
They are raking. And now Alex Guerrero, if he can't get at-bats at third base from Uribe, he can see some at-bats in the outfield as well in left field. So that Dodgers offense, not only are they hitting, they look really deep.
Yeah.
They are really deep
yeah.
right now.
And I mean, in the end, even if it's just, okay, well, you know, let Ethier play, and maybe somebody eventually bites and makes him a full-time. Listen, I don't think this guy's going to help you win a league, but it's interesting with the Crawford news that – you know, who knows? Maybe there's some really, you know, there's some value in him, and he's probably on the wire, you know.
Well,
I doubt he won't drafted in many leagues.
But I think you just said the key right there. Maybe he's not going to win a league for you, and he right. won't be an everyday player for the Dodgers all year, but let this guy prove he can still hit,
right.
and that makes him an attractive trade chip,
yep.
where when Puig gets healthy, when Crawford gets healthy, they can move Ethier out of town, and then Guerrero and Van Slyke can be their fourth and fifth outfielders, or at least in terms of the depth chart. Then you don't need Ethier, but he's proven that he can still play, and maybe somebody else gets interested.
Yeah, so just, you know, just something to keep an eye on, just based off this Crawford news.
Yeah, so Puig, I expect back within another week. I guess he's been out for what, on the DL for 5 days now or 6 days.
I think he
should be back in the minimum or close to it. Crawford's going to be out much longer. And two other Dodger rehabbers, we'll talk about them. Kenley Jansen has been throwing off the mound. He's going to start a minor league rehab
yep.
tomorrow,
yep.
which is Friday.
Yep.
They say he's basically in spring training mode, but I don't think he's going to need a ton of time to come back.
I think
back.
They say like 7 or 8 innings,
yeah,
something like
that. So, I mean, that'll probably be 2 weeks.
Yeah, takes a while.
For a reliever. So let's say 2 more weeks for Kenley Jansen. Hyunjin Ryu is throwing off flat ground, but as far as I know, hasn't even thrown a bullpen yet. He's at least another month away. you know, somebody asked him, I guess I read in the paper, quote, or the paper, I read online, do you think you'll be back by the end of May? And he kind of laughed it off, like, of course I will. But, I mean, he'd have to be throwing, you know, bullpens right now today to be
today,
back by
Henry.
The end of May. So, you know, the Dodgers have a lot of guys on the DL, but, man, do they look good even without them.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Their pitching's a little, starting pitching is shaky. The bullpen will be better once Kenley gets back, but their offense, man.
I mean, you know, Kershaw, I mean, when's the last time this guy got a win?
Yeah, seriously.
speaking of pitching, Homer Bailey, no bueno. They called up Lorenzen, who was a very high draft pick. I believe, was he a first rounder or something like that? He was a high draft pick. I'm pretty. Anyway, long story short, got called up, makes his debut. We were talking about strikeouts. You know, only pitched five innings, gave up three runs, so not, you know, eight hits, which is a lot. Five strikeouts, one walk. But do I have to start the free Tony Cingrani, you know?
Here's the thing. Cingrani's basically a one or maybe two-pitch pitcher. He really does look like he's best suited to the bullpen. Same with Aaron Sanchez.
That makes me sad.
Lorenzen threw four pitches yesterday.
Did
with
he?
Decent command. Fastball, changeup, slider, and curve.
Oh, good.
Decent velocity. Sat in the low to mid-90s, you know, 93, 94. You know, got touched up for some home runs, but in Great American Ballpark, that's going to happen. Interesting prospect. You know, like you said, the need for strikeouts has to put this guy on the radar right away.
Yeah, so somebody to look at, definitely an NL only. And, I mean, I don't know who he has next, but, you know, keep an eye on a pitcher ditch as well. Now, if you pitch on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So if you pitch on
Wednesday, makes you a two-star week
pitcher.
Next time.
So he's got a two-star week next week. Unless they skip him, you know, you never know.
Homer Bailey, just to finish the note on him, you know, interesting case because he did have surgery. And now he's got renewed soreness in that forearm. And Brian Price said he won't be pitching here anytime soon.
Nope.
So if you've got Homer Bailey, stash him away on the DL or just reclaim your draft dollars on him if you can, because does not look like a short outage.
And this is several pitches upwards of 94 miles an hour. This is a Mark Sheldon story about his debut. Just trying to find out where that. It's driving me nuts though. Where he?
Let's move on.
Boo.
Let's move on.
Boo you. Anyway, all right, yeah, bad job. They didn't tell me where he got drafted. What are you going to do? Okay, so Jed Lowry, we went over that about Korea. I think we covered that in great detail. Archie Bradley, did you see his face?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, unbelievable. It looked like it was inflated.
That is unreal.
And what's amazing is no broken bones, no concussion, no fractured eye socket.
He has to go on the DL, but he's fine. You know,
Let's put it this way. If that's the worst thing that happens to Archie Bradley in his life, he's going to be pretty lucky because he got off real lucky.
So Carlos Gomez due back this weekend?
Think he'll be back on Saturday after that hamstring injury. The Brewers could use him.
Absolutely.
Scooter Gennett is due back Tuesday after that hand laceration. He was off to a terrible start. But again, at least you're getting your opening day lineup back and gives you a shot to be what you thought you might be.
I had that unfortunate situation yesterday where I have Ryan Braun in a head-to-head league, and I was playing him in a head-to-head league. So I was like, oh, my God, two home runs. I was like, oh, wait, okay.
Yeah.
Oops. What's the latest on Desmond Jennings and Ben Zobrist?
All right, Desmond Jennings missed his fourth straight game on Wednesday due to the bad knee. They think he might be out until next week. Ben Zobrist has started light workouts, but he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks after getting his knee scoped. And another knee guy, Anthony Rendon, was on rehab at AA Harrisburg, but missed his fourth straight game on Wednesday due to tightness in his side. So he's got that to worry about now. So push back the timetable on him a little bit, but at least, you know, he's starting to work his way back. But, you know, in Tout Wars, and I don't want to make this always about me, but it is our podcast, so I can. I have 10 guys on my DL right now in Tout Wars. We have unlimited DL.
Thank God.
That doesn't count Brandon McCarthy, who I cut to reclaim the draft money because he's out for the year, and Shane Victorino, who is just a reserve player. I figured there was no reason to hang on to him. 12 players on my DL already.
What are you,
already.
The Texas Rangers?
I'm like,
who do you think you are, John Daniels?
I'm like, all right. This has got to be rock bottom, right? Let me tell you what rock bottom is. In Tout Wars, you can make weekly transactions, Monday deadline. Yeah. But if you have a guy go on or come off the DL, you can make a midweek transaction only for those DL guys. So I was able to replace Jed Lowry. I activated Logan Forsythe, you know, decent player, decent fill-in. I have Tanaka go on the DL. I had Rick Porcello on my bench. Now, the reason I had Porcello on my bench this week is because Toronto's a pretty good offense. I figured I would play it safe on that one. But with Tanaka hurt, I'm like, what choice do I have? My pitching's been terrible. Everybody's hurt. I got to put somebody in. So I go to do the midweek replacement to DL Tanaka, and I put Porcello in. But here's the thing. you can only do that after the guy officially goes on the DL and it processes through the on-roto site.
Right.
Tanaka was only put on the DL yesterday, so the transaction hadn't processed. So, in fact, I thought I had put in Porcello for last night, and he threw a gem. I don't get him in my lineup until Monday. So I didn't even have him active, and he threw seven innings, gave up one run and two hits, and got a win. And I didn't even have it active. That's how bad it is.
Lucky,
is
that, lucky for you, flags fly forever.
Is that what rock bottom looks like, Mike? I think it is.
I've heard worse. I've
really?
Heard worse, but that's pretty bad.
12 guys on the DL
I've heard worse.
April 30th?
I've heard worse.
12 guys, Mike.
I've heard worse.
A dozen.
Yeah, well.
A dozen.
Yeah. How many guys are on the DL in baseball right now?
I don't know. I think all of them, and I have them all.
Every guy I have.
Yeah.
Speaking of. Let's talk. We talked about McCarthy. We talked about the Dodgers rotation. But this Wainwright thing. So obviously, very unfortunate what happened to him. Very flukish, unreal. Very sad. But you know, the Cardinals must go on, and they have a suitable replacement in Gonzalez. But he's on the DL. I don't know if he's on the actual DL, but he's dealing with shoulder stiffness. He might be on the DL in the minors. So that replacement, like what happened with Lorenzen to Bailey, or Bailey to Lorenzen, is kind of on hold there with St. Louis. And you look, again, Cardinals had a competition spring training for the fifth starter. Carlos Martinez won, but that doesn't mean that Gonzalez is bad or was bad necessarily. So what do you think is going to happen with that situation?
I don't know. I think they're going to have to churn for a little while, use some of their organizational.
Besides trading for Cole Hamels.
Well, I was getting to that, so thanks for interrupting me.
But well, I should have said
awesome.
It first. So
are you done interrupting
my
me?
Mistake. No,
okay.
I wasn't interrupting you. I was correcting my mistake.
You done now?
Done.
Okay, so they're going to have to churn through some organizational depth until they can make a deal. I mean, that's the answer.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a bunch of guys, organizational depth, filler guys who might come in and make a couple starts and hope to find something. Come on, get it together.
Ooh.
But they're going to have to make a deal because their ace is out for the year. And this was a team that was built to contend and compete and win this year.
Well, they won a World Series with him hurt. Don't forget. They did.
Okay.
I'm just saying. It's true.
It is true, Mike.
It is true. So let's talk closer follies before we get to our Twitter machine questions. You wrote down Arizona, Cleveland, Colorado, Miami, Pittsburgh, Tampa Bay, and Toronto. Did you leave anything out?
I think that's fair. Arizona, Addison Reed has not been impressive.
Yeah.
You got to stash Brad Ziegler.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people thought Evan Marshall would be the guy to come along and take the job because he throws hard, but he hasn't been good, so just stash away Brad Ziegler. Cleveland, Cody Allen has had two horrendous outings.
Yeah, I know.
But his stuff is fine.
One was that crazy game against Chicago, right? Where it was all singles.
Right, right.
And the other one was against who? I forget.
He had another uglier blown save before that, I think.
Anyway.
But his stuff is fine. He's still striking people out. It's just been his command has been terrible. But Francona seems committed to him. I wouldn't worry about any stashes there right now. But it's certainly something to keep an eye on. Colorado, I drafted LaTroy Hawkins for a buck in Tout Wars. I'm like, I know this won't last, but let me see how many saves I can squeeze out of him. The answer was zero. He would count as my 13th DL guy, but I just cut him. Then everybody picked up Adam Ottavino. So what happened? Betancourt gets the save.
Yep.
No. It was just because Ottavino wasn't available. Ottavino gets the saves. Now he becomes entrenched as a closer. Now he's on the DL and said he's feeling pain around his elbow, not just a forearm thing around the elbow. And he said he's scared because he's never felt anything like that.
Right.
Now John Axford is the flavor of the month.
What's old is new again.
John Axford, look, saves.
Mm-hmm.
John Axford's available in Tout Wars. There's going to be some heavy action on John Axford this week in Tout Wars. Miami, Steve Cishek looked real bad his first couple of outings. Only one blown save, but got blown up in a couple of non-save outings. Velocity way down on him. So I stashed A.J. Ramos in Tout Wars, and what happens? His first outing for me gets knocked out without getting an out against the Mets on Monday or Tuesday night. And then Cishek has had two clean saves since then. So
very Melanson-esque.
Right, so
start to the season.
I think it's a good idea to stash away Ramos if you have the depth, but it looks like Cishek will get his chance to work his way through it, which brings us to Melanson.
Mm-hmm.
Velocity, still down. He's gotten three straight saves since his last real meltdown and threw another good inning last night, Wednesday night. I guess in, who'd they face, Arizona, I think? Colorado? Oh, Cubs, against the Cubs.
Yeah, Cubbies.
But the velocity's still down. He's still maxing out around 89 when he was sitting at 93, 94 last year. So I've also stashed Tony Watson. Tony Watson should be rostered in every league right now. I'm almost done, Mike. Only two more to go.
Do you like Watson, though? I know he should be stashed, but do you like him?
look, you know, a guy who throws 93 or 94 mm-hmm. with a good changeup and command and only has to get three batters out and can handle righties because he's got that changeup, absolutely he should be stashed.
Melanson, one inning, one hit, two strikeouts, no walks.
Right, but
you're already down to 520.
Topped out at 89.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay, everybody's getting saves there. I mean, Boxberger has the most, but I think Steve Jeltz got the save last night or yesterday in the extra
innings.
Well,
you can't really count that game.
But still, you know, the point is, they're you know, Ernesto. Oh, it was Ernesto Friere who got the save. Mm-hmm. Ernesto Friere, for crying out loud. But all that being said, McGee is rehabbing and should be back within another week to 2 weeks. I would assume he will nail down the closer job. And finally, Toronto. What was old is new again.
Yep, Cecil.
Brett Cecil is the closer again. Also available in my Tout Wars.
Announced, by the way, Cecil.
Right.
John Gibbons said, I am putting him back.
So think about this. Tout Wars, 15-team mixed, experts. The peak of the pinnacle of the
best.
Industry. The best of the best. You know, Nando DeFino, Ray Flowers, Patrick Davitt, Scott Engel, you know, Dave Ganos. I mean, Fred Zinke, Derek Van Riper, who have three of the last four Tout Wars championships between them. Loaded. Axford's a free agent, and Brett Cecil's a free agent. I think Joe Pisapia just cut Brett Cecil this week because he got tired of him getting blown up as a setup guy. So
the road to fifth place. You know, it's funny because the other day, listening to or watching whatever I was listening to the Yankee game, and the a softball game broke out in Boston with the Jays and the Red Sox.
Yeah.
And it was the Buckholz start, and he got knocked down like the third inning or whatever. You know who came in for him?
Oh, Mujica.
Yeah.
Right.
Mujica was pitching in the third inning.
Right.
I was like, I hope this guy pitches six innings and gets
the save.
Right. He's back.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, you know, certainly once Ottavino got the saves, you figured he was the guy, so there's no reason to roster Axford. There was really a very short leash on Osuna until Cecil got the job back, but I'm surprised Cecil, it was just bad timing for Joe that he cut him. But it's really unusual to see two closers, even lesser tier closers. Saves get snapped up all over the place in a league like this. Mm-hmm. Really unusual to see two closers available as free agents. I'm eager to see some people burn some fab money this week.
I picked up 16-team mixed head-to-head. I picked up Cishek. I had a Micah Johnson was on my bench. You know, I was like, I'm not waiting around for him. He's not, you know, he's not really doing anything. I just picked him up.
How is a closer available in a 16-team league?
Because somebody just got sick of him.
Wow.
You know, it's not an expert league, by the way.
I was talking with a buddy of mine last night on the trip. They're in a 10-team mixed league. It's just a friends and family neighborhood league. Right. He cut Starling Marte.
Wow.
I'm like, I saw him last. I'm like, what are you doing?
You almost had to be like, I'm going to let you pick him back up.
He's like, I'm just tired of him hitting 192. I'm like, power, and he steals every time he gets on. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway, yeah, good times. Is Lundy out there? Lundy, are you on the other side of the glass? Lundy.
There he is. He's waiting.
There he is. Lundy, we need that music next time.
The Closer Follies
music? And then you guys just pot it up, and we'll give you a good cue. That way, while you're reading whatever you're reading over there, you...
What do they call it, like Calliope music?
I think it's Calypso.
No, Calypso is the sound of the islands.
Oh.
That's steel drums and acoustic guitar. We should get some Calypso music in here. Right. Some Harry Belafonte.
Yeah, exactly. Daylight come and we won't go home.
Wow, that was awesome.
Beetlejuice, tremendous movie. One of the greatest scenes ever was the when they got possessed to sing that Harry Belafonte song. All right, let's go to tweets.
Wow.
This came over the Twitter machine at Fantasy411. The Goose wrangled some up. We got about six here. Let's get to all of them before we wrap this puppy up. At Jason R. Flanders, no relation to Ned. Heidi Lee Ho, Jason.
I knew that was coming.
Trade Frazier at $1 and Kluber at $1 for Abreu at 20. Contracts run through 2016.
Yeah, see, this is a tough one, and that shows that it's a good trade because basically you're getting the best player in Abreu, but at a pricey contract, although I presume not too bad if it's a keeper format, but giving up Frazier and Kluber for $1 when you can keep both of them next year for $1 each, that's going to sting. You know, the Todd father is having a similar year to last year. Not a great average, but hitting for power, stealing a couple of bags.
Yep.
And I'm not worried about Kluber, even though the ERA is high. He's averaging almost 10 strikeouts per nine innings, 5-1 strikeout to walk rate. He's going to be fine. But Abreu, and I said this during spring training, I think this guy's got as good a chance as winning a Triple Crown as any player in baseball. The power's been there so far this year. The average hasn't been great, but I think that'll creep up. this looks like a pretty fair value deal when you incorporate the keeper value and all that. Ultimately, it comes down to what are your needs and what's your risk tolerance. But I like this for both sides. I think it's a very definition of a fair value trade.
I would absolutely agree. At Jalen00, is it time to drop Green? Cozart, Happ, Kelly, Heston, Morrow, and Ruby DLR are available on waivers. And much to the delight of Yankee fans who were beside themselves because Green was absolutely lighting it up early, he has completely turned into a pumpkin his last two starts. Now, of course, he can pitch out of it, but...
But here's the thing. In his first, three starts, he gave up one earned run, I think.
Yeah, and he had like a 790
rate. But his strikeout rate was really low. He had something like 8 strikeouts in 19 innings or whatever it was. His last two starts, 15 strikeouts in like 10 innings, but he's gotten blown up. So
he's around the strike zone.
Right, so it's kind of averaging out. You know, is it time to drop Green? I mean, yeah, he was a handy sleeper pick, and he got off to a nice start. But, you know, pitchers are going to come and go. Out of all these pitchers that Jalen mentioned, the guy I really, really like is Ruby De La Rosa. You know, he's also got kind of a high ERA, but a 25-5 strikeout to walk rate. And that high ERA was inflated by one bad start. The problem is his next two starts, Mike, are against the Dodgers in Dodger Stadium, and they're punishing some people, and then in Coors Field.
Right.
And you know how I know this? I have him in Tout Wars because I have no choice.
Well, he'll be hurt tomorrow, so you don't have to
worry exactly.
About it.
I have no choice. I mean, with all the injuries I have, I'm like 25-5 strikeout to walk rate, I might as well. So I like De La Rosa there. Brandon Morrow's been exceptional his first couple of times
Brandon
out. Jared Cozart is really developing frontline stuff, but you want to see some strikeouts come back. I think you're going to end up churning through a lot of these guys as the season progresses. I don't have a problem cutting Green. I'd find the guy with the best matchup in his next outing. I'd go for him. And then you know what? I might cut that guy and pick Green back up.
Someone else. And what's concerning about Green, though, was that it was like, you know, he was 3-0, and I sold him short. I'm sorry. He had a 0.39 ERA.
Yeah, One
earned run over 23 innings with, like you said, very low strikeouts, only 11. Okay. But then he goes into Cleveland. He gets roughed up in 4 innings. His ERA jumps all the way to 3. He only had 1 strikeout. And then Minnesota, they roughed him up yesterday, 4 1/3. Now his ERA all of a sudden is 4.60. But, you know, it's April's kind of stuff. But 8 strikeouts, so I don't know. You know,
Let's put it this way. If all of these players are on waivers in your league, then you're really not worried. You're not worrying about Shane Green.
Just play matchups.
Yeah.
Just play them. Pitcher ditch, baby. Pitcher ditch. All right, at WillieD09, who wins this trade? Harper and Kershaw, for Greinke, Puig, and Lorenzo Cain.
Look, simply put, a lot to like on both sides, but I'm taking the Harper and Kershaw side.
Mm-hmm.
As much as I like Puig, you know, he's as much sizzle as steak as Harper is.
Yeah.
I mean, really, you know, he's hit for average. He's shown the flashes of power, but he's not a very good base stealer. You know, he's... frankly, more valuable in an OBP league, I think, than an average league since his plate discipline's improving. But Harper's hitting for power, hitting in the middle of that Nationals lineup that I think will get better. And Kershaw, you throw his bad start out the window. He's the best pitcher in baseball until somebody tells you otherwise.
Yep.
So I like the Harper-Kershaw side.
Yeah, no, me too. And also, you're getting an extra roster spot, too, because you're giving up 3 to get 2. So you get to play with that spot as well.
Right.
So there's more value there.
Cain's off to a good start, but, you know, it's a small sample size to really be able to project out what he'll be worth when we have a couple thousand at-bats to get a better picture of that.
At Big Sully T, Keiko, McHugh, or Odorizzi, ROS, which stands for rest of season.
Oh, thanks. I wasn't sure. you know, honestly... all these guys are legit.
They are legit.
There's plenty to like with all of them.
Yeah.
You know, I would probably take Odorizzi.
Me too.
Just because I like his stuff. Yeah. He's in a better pitcher's park.
Yeah. And that division is not as scary as it once was. And he's shown he can face anybody.
Right. A little bit better defense. You know, all of the things just give him a slight edge. But Dallas Keuchel has taken on all comers since last year and bowed before no man. And Colin McHugh's last 20-odd starts going back to last season, he's been as dominant as anybody in baseball. So
crazy.
I think all these guys are legit, but I just give a slight edge to Odorizzi.
Yeah, you can't go wrong here. And I mean, if you're in a league where these guys – I can't imagine a league where all these guys are available.
My guess is he's working on a trade and these are his options in the trade.
Yeah, I mean, well the good thing is, you know – Ask for the guy you want and – settling for these other two is you're in a no-lose situation if that's in fact what's going on here with Big Sully T.
Right.
All right. At Sherry Mon, trade McCutchen and Polanco for Kershaw and Springer?
Wow. You know, I mean, McCutchen, that knee is really affecting his play. You know, still scraping along under 200, hasn't been active on the base paths. as much as you say take the elite bat over the elite arm, there is reason to have concern over him. Polanco's off to an okay start. Springer, for a guy hitting under 200, is doing it all.
Yeah.
He's got, what, two or three homers, eight steals already?
He had a five RBI game the other day.
Yeah, so, you know, again, as much as I take the elite bat over the elite arm, it's very tempting to go for the Kershaw-Springer side.
So let's talk about McCutchen for a second.
Okay. Let's.
Have we learned anything? Because we spent all spring training being told that it was an undisclosed or he had this secret situation with his leg or whatever. But don't be worried. He's not worried. He'll be fine. If it was the regular season, he'd be playing, blah, 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 blah. I took him number four overall.
Don't blame you.
Right. Again, don't confuse the outcome with the decision type of deal. But is this a warning sign going forward? And not necessarily with McCutchen, just with spring training mysteries in general.
Well,
when you're going to spend that high of a pick.
Well, look, you know, spring training, we say spring training stats don't count. Now we maybe have some evidence that they do count a little bit more than we thought. But we've always traditionally thought that spring training was about health and opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all right, so now the guy's got a health problem. Now you have to project out how serious a problem is this. So we talked about this going back to last year. I drafted Cole Hamels in a lot of leagues last year because I was confident that the bursitis would clear up or the tendonitis in his shoulder, and he would pitch effectively. And he did. But he didn't come back until a couple of weeks later than I thought he would. This year in Tout Wars, I took a bunch of risks like that. Frankly, way too many. Mm. Jason Worth, who came back faster than I thought, but who's been terrible. Tanaka, who pitched great, but now is hurt. Hyunjin Ryu and Kenley Jansen, who are taking longer to come back than I thought they would. So each one of these situations is unique.
Yeah, that's true.
You have to look at the nature of the injury, how it affects the player's performance, and then read the tea leaves a little bit for how much of a risk you're willing to take to get that upside.
You know, it's funny because this is the reason why Miggy dropped.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. And there's the other side of the coin.
Right, you know, so, I mean, and he dropped from, you know, top four or top three to top 10.
Yeah.
So it's not like he plummeted, but he did drop.
Right, but if you knew on draft day that Miggy Cabrera would be 100% healthy, forget what his numbers look like today. If I just told you this guy's 100% healthy, top three, top four pick
absolutely.
At worst,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So it was purely out of the fear of the injury that he dropped even as far as he did, but every situation is different. You know, as of today, you say that the injury is a non-issue. McCutchen, what looked like it was no big deal, as of today, you say is turning out to be a very big deal.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
you think he has DL in his future?
Tough to say. He's still playing.
Yeah, that's true. You know? He is playing. All right. So what are we doing with this trade? We're taking Kershaw?
Kershaw in some leagues probably went number one.
Yeah.
You know, or worse, number two behind Trout. So elite bat for elite arm, I generally take the elite bat. But the fear of risk, you know, the risk with McCutchen and the fact that Springer right now looks like he's going to outpace Polanco, I'll probably lean towards the Kershaw-Springer side.
Yeah, no problem with that. Last one, at Eric Estenfelder. Should I trade D. Gordon for Chris Archer? Just lost Tanaka to the DL and have Kipnis to replace Gordon.
Yeah, I mean, if you think of this as a two for two, I like it that way.
It's good spot.
It's fair value of Gordon for Archer. And by the way, I did the Baseball HQ radio interview with Patrick Davitt earlier this week, and that's up, you can find that on the Twitter and listen to now. We talked about studs and duds in the early going. And I flagged Chris Archer as my AL starting pitcher stud that I believe in. The strikeout rate has been off the charts. The walk rate is way down. The ground ball rate is way up. And there's a reason for that. The Jason Gray standard. What's different about this pitcher? Obviously, age and maturity, learning to command his stuff. But he's really starting to go more and more heavily towards that slider. Maybe long term, that'll be an injury risk. But that slider is an elite weapon right now. And he is using it to full effect. So I'm a big believer in Chris Archer.
So, I mean, last one, because, you know, there was talked about during the Yankees series when, you know, you're talking about the Rays and you're watching this team and, you know, they're doing pretty good, off to a very nice start to the season, only out of the first place by one game on April 30th, by the way. But, you know, Moore, Cobb coming eventually, right? Cobb's way sooner than Moore, but Cobb is close, isn't he?
Not close, exactly. But Smiley's back has looked excellent in his first two starts. You could have McGee next week.
Yeah, I mean,
it's coming together.
It's not a team you want to pick on.
I'm not just convinced they're going to be able to score consistently.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying from fantasy value for pitchers.
Oh, right.
You know, it'll be interesting.
You know, the thing about spring training injuries.
Who's going to lose? Smiley's not going anywhere. Archer's not going anywhere. Odorizzi's not going anywhere.
Right. Well, Matt Andrews got sent down. not Colomé, was it Alex Colomé, I think, is going to come off the DL and make the start on Friday, yeah. But he's probably, you know, he might not be long for the rotation.
So your point being that somebody in the 4 and 5 slot is probably not rostered on a fantasy roster.
Right.
So it's not like, oh, my God, I got a guy that's going to lose his job.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, you know, just to finish the thought about spring injuries,
yeah.
Spring injuries create a buying opportunity, but you have to have risk tolerance and have a good read on the risk. You know, clearly in a lot of the situations that, you know, I took some of those players, I didn't have a proper read on the risk, and that's on me.
I blame you, yes.
But by the same token, it looks like a lot of people misread the risk on Miguel Cabrera. So you never know.
You know, it's just, and in all fairness to, like, just even to myself, I mean, there's really not, right, like you said, if Miggy was 100% healthy, would I have taken him at 4? He probably would have been there, and especially in this league, because Kershaw went 1 and King Felix went 3.
Right, you figure it would have been Trout, McCutchen, Goldschmidt, Cabrera, right, if he was healthy?
Yeah.
If you knew for a fact that they were all healthy, yeah. That's as late as he's going.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but it's just like, you know, there's really and you know what does it too? And you know what? Just to really your point, every situation is different. I love Joey Votto this year. I knew I could get him at a discount, and I did.
Right.
So why take Miggy? Now, I'm one of the biggest proponents of, well, screw it, just take 2 first basemen because you do have corner and you do have utility, so what's the difference? It's not like you're taking Big Poppy and you can't move him around.
Mm-hmm.
But just to me, Miggy wasn't sexy because of the position and because of the injury.
Well, it's
the
funny.
The position had almost as much to do with it as the injury did.
It's funny you mentioned that in the Gotham Diamond District League I'm in with neighbor Steve and a lot of friends from the industry. Sheehan's in that league. A lot of good dudes. I ended up taking Encarnacion because he's Encarnacion. And then I liked the discount on Rizzo, so I took him for 19.
Yeah.
And then I liked the price on Votto, and then I took Rizzo.
Right.
So I have 3 first basemen. Right. And I'm willing to deal one of them, namely not Encarnacion, but the offers haven't been there because everybody keeps waiting for Votto to come back down to earth.
He's not. Joey Votto is legit. Canadian and Italian. Don't mess with Canadian and Italians. In the office league here, 10-team mixed, I had the number 10 pick, and I took E5 and Abreu. My first 2 picks. I was
Abreu,
like,
you fell to 10?
Yeah. You know, because pitcher, you know, once Kershaw goes in the first round, it disrupts everything. You know what I mean? And again, it's first base. I mean, I kind of understand it because it is first base. And yes, me and you are way higher on Abreu. I could see people thinking, well, you know, he had such a sick year. Can he really get any better than that?
Yeah.
Still makes him a first rounder.
And look, you know, I'm going to bring up Ray again, not to pick on him, but just to point out, you know, Ray wrote a 2-page article in his preview magazine making the case against Abreu as a first-rounder. And everything he wrote was factually true and spot on. I mean, you know, he made a very logical-based argument against Abreu, but I can make an argument in the other way that all of the things that Ray pointed out as, you know, as risks to me were, well, maybe this guy's power is such that he can have a 30% home run to fly ball rate. You know, maybe the fact that he drew so many walks in the second half shows that he does have the strike zone discipline to maintain a high average, you know, in the line drive rate and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, all these things cut both ways. There are no absolutes. I mean, look, let's let this be the final thought for this show, unless you want to add a final thought.
I'll have one more final thought, but you won't have to respond to it.
There are no absolutes in any of what we're doing here when it comes to fantasy baseball. We're using all the information we have available to us. We're reading the tea leaves, we're looking at the stats, we're reading the Twitter, we're reading all the reporters on MLB.com and the club sites. We're making calls, we're asking friends, we're getting opinions from the experts. Mm-hmm. There are no absolutes. There is no sure thing. You're using all the information you have to make the best decision you can, and then the players play. So at the end of the day, if your process was bad, you feel bad about that. If you picked Andrew McCutchen because all the signs said this guy's going to be fine and he got hurt,
yeah. And he's not even hurt yet.
This happens sometimes.
I know.
You have to be willing to accept that at a certain point, things happen.
All right. That'll do it for this edition of the MLB.com Fantasy 411. Don't forget to check out Fred Zinke's work on Twitter at FredZinkeMLB on the site. That's MLB.com and on the fantasy site on MLB.com. He's all over the place doing Twitter chats, doing stories. Well, he'll join this show on a consistent basis, I think,
starting into the summer.
Yeah, in early June. He has some commitments that keeps him busy in the morning, so he's unable to join us now, but we'll get him involved once the summer gets kicking. Thanks to Duke for joining us. We'll keep having him on every couple of weeks. I will get up a half hour early just for the Duke. That's how much I respect him. That's how much I respect him, Corey. I would not do that for you, by the way.
I've noticed.
And keep an eye on the blog, fantasy411.mlblogs.com. For Corey Schwartz, for Jim Duquette, for everybody that does a great job on the other side of the glass, I'm Mike Ciano, and this has been the MLB.com Fantasy 411.